grateful to have had you in our lives, and in particular those with whom we went to see. I'm going to start with the book today, and the book today is called The Log of a Lime Juicer, and it came to me from one of Captain Joe's people on the Coast Guard Channel, Fred Nichols. And Fred saw this book. It is clearly has been used and has been read by many different people. A lime juicer is an expression which comes to us from our British colleagues, British fellow seafarers, and back in the days when it was finally discovered that scurvy, which is an illness that is which comes to people who are do not have access to vitamin C and do not have access to fresh fruits and vegetables. And so the started out with the British Admiralty and then what became the British Ministry of Transport. They had a statute which required that lime juice be given to sailors so that they would not contract scurvy and get sick. And so it became then customary to refer to those people who sailed under the Red Duster, the Red British Merchant Flag, to call them lime juicers. And so this book is a book that was written by a British merchant captain who sailed in sailing ships and ended his career. It was written in 1933. This particular copy has a copyright of 1933, and it was in a second printing. It was had that much interest. And I'm about half through it, and one of the things that struck me is that regardless of whether we go to sea in sail or whether we go to sea in steam or whether we go to sea in small boats, or whether we go to sea in very, very large container ships, about which I'm going to talk in just a minute, about one which is aground, that the descriptions of seagoing and of the sea itself remain pretty much the same. So I'm going to not only recommend this book, it will be probably a difficult one to find. I do not intend to part with my copy because it is reading as if one of those that I would want to read more than once. And the other thing that strikes me about it is that all of the descriptions of sailing ships and the way sailing ships are handled and the nomenclature of all of the parts and pieces of them is exactly the same as it is in Eagle. And, of course, I trained in Eagle in square rigger sail. So I'm going to take a quick break here, and I'm going to go around the table with all of these lovely ladies and ask them to tell me their names, and I want you to make it loud and clear because I'm going to have to hold the telephone up. So down on the other end is Paddlin' Madeline, and Paddlin' Madeline is going to paddle to Sweden this summer where she's going to be studying. So, Madeline, how about giving us a good morning to all of the people all over the world, including Stockholm, Sweden, that listen to this broadcast? Okay, Anna May is a very athletic young lady, and right now she's wearing shorts, and it is all of about -5, and so she doesn't go outside. Anna May, honey, you going to say hello? There we go. Sayla, how about you, dear? You're wearing shorts as well. And Daisy, how about it? How about it, kiddo? There we go. So I had another one here, but she escaped. So when one is fortunate enough to have people like this in your family, then you are truly blessed. This is also an interesting household because everybody here takes sea showers. And all of Captain Joe's people who have gone to sea know what those mean. That is that you go into the shower, you wet down, you turn the water off, you soap up, and you scrub down, then you turn the water back on to rinse off. And the reason that that happens in this house is that my son Stephen has to go out and bring the water back. They truck it up here because they live on top of a hill. They have no well. They have no city water. And so every toilet flush is considered to be an expenditure of some of that water, and every shower that's taken is part of the way that all of us learned how to do it when we were going to sea. So, ladies, thank you very much for greeting all of Captain Cho's listeners all over the world. And if we had 10 hours, we could sit down and talk with each one of you about what it is that you plan to do with your lives. But you're just going to have to listen to what I have to say to all of the people that listen to me. So the next thing to bring up is that another one of the evergreen ships is aground. This one is the Ever Forward, and she is aground in a piece of water that should be familiar to just about every Coast Guardsman on here, because she's aground just north of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge. And she is not quite as large as Ever Given, the evergreen ship that went aground in the Suez Canal. But she's about 12,000 TEU. You all will remember a TEU is the equivalent of a 20-foot container. She is very heavily laden, and just superimposing a nautical chart on top of the map that comes with marine traffic, what looks to me, she was downbound from Baltimore headed for Norfolk. She was and is loaded with, it looks to me, as many can be gotten onto her. And as she came around the Paradise Beach area, headed southbound in the dredged channel, it looks to me as if she swung a little bit too wide and went aground on the wrong side of the channel, over on the right-hand side of the channel, looking at a chart as she is going up. So she was southbound, and I'm looking right now at marine traffic, and I can see that south of the Bay Bridge, there is a whole cluster of ships waiting to get up into the port of Baltimore. So my guess is that Vessel Traffic Service is allowing only one ship up at a time. And I know these waters very well. My Northwind was home ported at the Coast Guard in Curtis Bay. And so we had, when it was time for her to see, we had to take her out through the swing bridges, around through the channel and out into the Patapsco River on our way south. And we went right by this place where Evergreen Forward is aground. Just looking right now at marine traffic, I don't see on her. And so my guess is that she drove herself up on this flat at probably 12 or 13 knots and is pretty well stuck. And since the tidal range up there is very small, probably less than 2 feet, it's not going to be enough to get her off. My guess is that they're going to have to put a crane barge alongside her to take off many of those containers to lighten her enough so that she can be pulled off, and then she's going to have to go into dry dock. Next week, I will be back in the Gene Bosch studio, and hopefully by then she will be off of that bank. She will have been inspected, and she will be on her way. The reason that I know that she's over on the wrong side is that there have been a number of downbound ships, one of them headed for Dubrovnik, and passing her on her starboard side on the correct side of the channel. And there was one time when I was bringing my Northwind down in 00 visibility through that same reach and passed so close to an upbound freighter. Once you're committed in that reach, you have to keep on going. So it's a pretty sticky place. And, of course, all of that is dredged, unlike in Puget Sound. So her captain and her pilot. She, of course, had a pilot aboard. Their licenses are certainly in jeopardy of being suspended because she certainly should have made that turn and should have been able to get herself all the way down to her destination port of Norfolk. I am just in receipt from a wonderful friend who is also a retired icebreaker captain in the Coast Guard and a former polar class captain, and he sent me an article about Polar Star. And for all of you environmentalists, you'll be happy to know that Polar Star has figured out how to grow some fresh vegetables in the hangar. Now, in my experience, the hangar was where you grew helicopters, and then once having grown them, you maintained them and serviced them, and there wasn't a great deal of room in there for a hydroponics arrangement. But somehow or other, the very ingenious crew members, under the happy leadership of their captain and XO, have managed to construct this hydroponics arrangement. Hydroponics, of course, is where you don't grow plants in soil. You grow it in a growing medium, a liquid growing medium. And so they grow enough so that they could have at least one salad for one meal, and that tells me that somehow or other they were able to figure out how to get the hydroponics equipment into the hangar without also compromising the need for space for the helicopters and to maintain them. Just looking at the temperature for FAI, I see that it's bumped up 1 degree, and after the broadcast, the cold for an adventure. I don't know exactly yet what that adventure is going to be. Adventure, and I really look forward to that. The looking at the my other list of things that I want to cover. I want to give an endorsement to a company called American Flag Express. American Flag Express is the company that I use when I buy flags for the Point Robinson, when I buy flags for Captain's Quarters, and they specialize in flags which are super heavy duty for heavy weather. They do double and triple reinforcement out on the fly. And the flags that I have bought for Point Robinson have lasted for months rather than the weeks that normally they would. So I recommend this company. All of the flags, of course, are made in the United States. And they also have a flag repair service. So right out in front of Captain's Quarters this very minute is a beautiful flag from American Flag Express. And it is a very large one. And, in fact, somebody the other day commented and said, "Captain Joe, you have such a large flag out there, you're going to need another flagpole." So I'm not flagpole, but I do recommend this company. They are lovely people. They provide wonderful and very quick service. And it must be honestly reported that they are not inexpensive. This is a quality product, run by a quality company, which is staffed by quality people. And as in most things in life, you get exactly what it is that you pay for. I've been doing some work with the State Department of Natural Resources. I've been providing access to my beach so that they can get out and monitor some sensors that they have put out, including some to monitor the health of eelgrass, and eelgrass is part of the food chain. So when you have healthy eelgrass, you have healthy smelt, which means that you have healthy salmon, which means that you have healthy orca, because they are all part of the environmental food chain. And it's really important to me to be a part of that. And I mentioned that this is part of the State Department of Natural Resources, State DNR. All of these are relatively young people. They are all people who are full of the fire of the Lord when it comes to environmental matters, and they are just wonderful people with whom to work. I always look forward to when one of their trucks drives up in Captain's Quarters and they are headed down to my beach to check out all of their equipment. And I am hopeful that they're going to be able to expand their service and expand the amount of equipment that they've got out, because all of these things have a bearing on the health of Puget Sound, and I really like to be a part of that. One of the stories that I'm following is what's happening with Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. And last month, the National Geographic had a cover story on this. And so I am recommending that those of you who do not have access to National Geographic go online and look at the online edition and read about what is going on with Notre Dame, Notre Dame, a place where Mary R. and I have spent some time, and I was just devastated when the building caught on fire, and now they are doing the hard work necessary to make it, to bring it back to its former splendor using some modern material so that the cathedral will be with us for another 1,000 years. I've begun giving tours out at Point Robinson Light again. People call me, they see my telephone number on the website for the Vashon Park District, and they call me up, and we make an arrangement for a time which is convenient to both them and to me, and I go out and open the lighthouse and pontificate at some length on the story of Point Robinson. But it's been 2 years, almost 2 years, since we've been able to do the tours out there. Finally, we have now started to do it again, and it is a source of great enjoyment to me to be able to story of the light, tell the story of its part in our maritime history in the great Pacific Northwest. I have written a lot, and I have talked a lot about how I was raised by chief petty officers. And now that on the Coast Guard channel we have a number of warrant officers, I am adding to that story by saying that I also was influenced in my apprentice officer years, and when I was getting ready for my first command when I was 23, by warrant officers. Warrant officers are officers who do not normally hold the president's or the king's or the queen's commission, but hold instead a warrant of office. And warrant officers go back for centuries. When you read, for example, if you read the O'Brien stories, and you read about a bosun or a gunner or the sailing master, those are all warrant officers. They lived in their own mess in a sailing ship, and we have over the centuries continued the custom. Today, warrant officers on all of the military carry a commission rather than a warrant, but the term warrant officer still stays with us. And I hereby and herewith acknowledge that I also was schooled and in one or two cases even protected from the wrath of my first XO by warrant officers with whom I went to sea. The young man who is alleged to have started the fire in Bonhomme Richard is now going to be tried by general court-martial. We have talked about that particular subject on this program before. We're going to talk about it again as this whole thing opens out. One of the things that has happened is that the first appointed defense counsel, military defense counsel, has been transferred, and another one has, in fact, two of them have been provided to this young man. He is now an E-1, a seaman recruit. And when you look at his official photograph that was taken when he was in boot camp, he is painfully and incredibly young. He is going to go through not only a judicial process, but an emotional process. I make no excuses for him if, in fact, he did start that fire. However, I also have, as I have in the past, must remark on the fact that the fire could have probably been contained, certainly should have been contained such that the ship not be lost. We've talked about the why of that, and we probably will talk about it again. It certainly is going to be part of his defense when they get to the trial part of it. So he is, he's pleaded not guilty. He's saying that he did not start the fire. It will be to his defense, it will be to the prosecution to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, not to a jury of 12, but to a board of officers and, should he choose, enlisted people, the majority of whom, not a unanimous decision, but the majority of whom have to vote to convict. So it's going to be a very difficult time for the entire Navy, because there are going to be things come out of that particular trial which are not going to be particularly savory, not going to be particularly commendatory to many, many people. And yet these things have to come out. They have to be examined, and they have to be corrected, and unfortunately also... even if this young man started the fire, which, by the way, in wartime could be a capital offense, hazarding a vessel is one of the charges that could be a capital offense in wartime. We have, I've got just a couple of minutes, so I'm going to put out. So in captain's quarters, I have never had a dishwasher. And the reason for that is that Mary R. never wanted a dishwasher, or maybe she wanted one, but she proclaimed always that she did not have room for a dishwasher. She needed the cabinet space. And so I honored that and never had one installed. But since then, I have figured out a way to compensate for the loss of cabinet space. And so I went to a dispensary of dishwashers, and I purchased one. I purchased a really good one and had it shipped to captain's quarters, thinking that it's in a matter of just a few minutes and by a skilled practitioner. So my skilled practitioner got up underneath there, and he said, "Oh, Captain Joe, it looked like before that we were just replacing one." And I said, "No, there never has been one in here before." And he said, "Well, we must install a dedicated electrical supply." And he said, "I'm going to send somebody over to give you an estimate on that." And that person came over and gave me an estimate. And we're running now a dedicated electrical supply. And the cost for that is now twice what the dishwasher costs. We still have not gotten the thing in, so we are now with a dedicated supply, which is going to go in a few days. And then somebody has to come over and make the plumbing connections, and for someone to tell me, "But we need a professional plumber to come in," which means that I will have bought a dishwasher for X, and that by the time it gets installed, we will be up to 5X when I could have probably bought my replacement S-Class Mercedes for about the same amount of money. And we now have indeed come to the end of my time, and as always, it is my wish and my desire and my command from the captain's chair that each of you who is responsible for somebody else, that you will indeed fulfill the obligations and the privileges of that leadership and take care of the people for whom you are responsible and accountable, that you will indeed watch their six. I head back from Fairbanks, reluctantly for me, maybe happily for the family. But I head back from Fairbanks on Thursday morning. We're going to celebrate Stephen's 50th birthday on Wednesday evening, and to help him over that particular shoal, piece of shoal water. Half a century. And we're all going to be a part of that. And as always, being up in the captain and watching properly, we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again.